Mormonism 101 for Teens is a valuable resource for anyone wanting a simplified view of the Mormon religion from a Christian perspective. Mormonism 101 for Teens is available at the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore in Salt Lake City or mrm.org. Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. And with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We have been talking this past week about the end of the Mormon Miracle Pageant. Its last performance was June 22nd, 2019. And we've been reminiscing about some of our experiences there when we first started going to the pageant and talking about what the pageant itself, the play, this is an outdoor play that has been going on for over 50 years. What was the play all about? A lot of the play deals with the early history of Mormonism, Joseph Smith's alleged first vision where he encounters God the Father and Jesus Christ, and also how Moroni shows up to tell him about the gold plates. But it also has in it some stories from the Book of Mormon. So you're getting a combination of Mormon history as well as some of what the Book of Mormon talks about. And we've been also surmising as to what were some of the reasons that the church leadership felt it important to bring this play to an end. Not only this play, but even other pageants that the church has had going on for years in other parts of the country. As I mentioned, there's probably a number of reasons, not any one particular reason, but I personally think part of the reason may be, number one, the name of the pageant itself becomes problematic because 17th President Russell M. Nelson came out with a decree that Mormons were not supposed to call themselves Mormons anymore. They weren't supposed to use the word Mormonism nor refer to the church as the Mormon Church. He wanted the proper title to be used when addressing the name of the church. But I think there's also another reason. I think one of the big reasons, personally, for me, is because of the inaccuracy when it depicts Mormon history. Now, at the time, the recording was made because, as I've mentioned, this is all lip-synced. The actors are not saying anything. They're pantomiming to an already recorded dialogue that's been around for 50 years. And the history that was understood by Latter-day Saints 50 years ago is perhaps in many ways a different history that modern Mormons have come to understand in light of these Gospel Topics essays that started coming out in 2013. So we've been using this handout, this magazine that attendees were given. It's titled The Mormon Miracle Pageant, Thanks for the Memories. But in it, there's an article called Scene Synopsis, titled Keep Up with Fast-Paced Pageant. So we're using their outline to go through some of the scenes in the Mormon Miracle Pageant and talking about some of the historical inaccuracies, or at least some of the things that have been left out in the play that are a part of Mormon history.
Let's do number 7. Samuel, a Lamanite prophet, prophesies of the Messiah. A prophet named Samuel, who was a Lamanite, attempts to preach repentance to the now wicked Nephites, but the Nephites cast him out of their city, so he stands on the city wall to preach.
The reason why we bring this up is because there's been a couple of occasions, at least for me personally, and I'm sure others have used this as well, because Mormons, when we're there sharing our gospel, the New Testament gospel, with members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, are puzzled as to why we would do this. And some of them get quite offended that we would even bother to share what we believe with them. I guess it's okay for their missionaries to come to our doors, but for some reason, when we go to them, that becomes offensive to them. And I've used this example of Samuel the Lamanite. Say, look at the Nephites in the Book of Mormon story. They didn't like what Samuel the Lamanite had to say, but yet you look at Samuel the Lamanite as a type of hero in the Book of Mormon story because he stood up for what he believed to be the truth. And I would often say, that's all I'm doing. Kind of look at me as a Samuel the Lamanite. And I know I'm not the only one that used that as an example. I know other Christians on the streets use Samuel the Lamanite as an example also.
One of the things that I always like to talk to people when they say, why are you out here? Why don't you go down to the mosque or to the Jehovah's Witness Kingdom Hall or whatever else they want to say? And I say, well, you know, this is a public event. It's not a church service per se. And I want everybody to be able to practice what Latter-day Saints call agency. So we want to be able to give you the other side. If what I'm saying is not true, then it ought to be rejected, of course. But maybe if what I'm saying has some kind of truth to it, it's going to make your people think more about this. And maybe if Mormonism is true, I would think that somebody like me presenting a false gospel would make them stronger in their faith, in their true faith. So I don't think anybody should be scared about somebody presenting a gospel like Samuel the Lamanite. He was up there preaching. In essence, I think many of us are Samuel the Lamanites out there trying to present what we think is biblical truth. Number 15 in the scene synopsis, this one is called Martyrdom of Joseph and Hiram Smith. Persecutions of the saints continues. Joseph Smith and his brother Hiram are jailed in Carthage, Illinois. A mob storms the jail and shoots and kills them. The saints leave Nauvoo and cross the Mississippi River.
Now, why is this scene so important? Well, it goes back to what I said earlier. There are some scenes that it depicts that are not accurate according to history. I watched the play during the first and second week. I watched it twice. And the scene of Joseph and Hiram in Carthage jail is certainly not accurate. And why is it inaccurate? Yes, they did sing A Poor Wayfaring Man of Grief. That's true. But one thing that is left out, and that is the smuggled pistols that were given to Joseph Smith and his brother Hiram that same day that both Joseph and Hiram were killed at Carthage jail later that afternoon. Cyrus Wheelock had come to visit Joseph Smith and gave him an Ethan Allen pepper box. John S. Fulmer had come to visit Joseph Smith and dropped off another pistol that Joseph gave to his brother Hiram. You do not see in this scene of Smith using that Ethan Allen pepper box. He opens the door ever so slightly and he sticks his arm through it and he fires on the mob that is on the landing trying to get into the debtor's cell where Joseph and Hiram were located. That is left out entirely. Instead, it just shows Joseph Smith standing next to the window. You hear the sound of gunfire, and then Joseph Smith, his hands go up, and he says, "Oh, Lord, my God." Very dramatic scene. But Joseph Smith does not have the gun. He does not use the gun. In fact, it's not explained that what just Joseph Smith was saying at that time before he was shot was, "Oh, Lord, my God, dot, dot, dot." Well, he should have finished that expression, "Is there no help for the widow's son?" which was a Masonic signal of distress. He was shot as he was trying to give that Masonic signal of distress because Smith was a Mason. And I'm sure he was trying to get help from people outside, perhaps not realizing a lot of the people in the mob were probably Masons that were pretty ticked off with Joseph Smith at this time. So the death scene of Joseph Smith certainly is not accurate according to what happened on Carthage Jail on June 27th, 1844.
And yet, 10 or 15 years ago, they did show the gun. Why do you think they took that gun out of the pageant?
I have no idea, but I remember seeing it years ago, and I thought I do remember a scene where he does tend to use the gun.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, it disappears. I don't know why they did that. Perhaps because it does not portray Joseph Smith quite as the martyr most people envision when they hear the word martyr. You don't usually hear martyrs for shooting back. And according to John Taylor in The History of the Church, which is published by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, in Volume 7, page 101 to 103, Taylor makes mention that he used that gun to shoot three people, two of whom died. Now, again, there's controversy as to whether or not there were people that actually died, but the fact remains, and we've discussed this in past broadcasts, Smith is trying to at least bring bodily harm to individuals when he fires this gun into the crowd of attackers on the landing in the Carthage jail.
The final scene synopsis, number 20, deals with Robert and Mary, the fictional couple that is talked about throughout this pageant. And so they both are dead, and now they're reunited in a celestial welcome. And it says, as Robert dies, he hears Mary's voice. Dressed in white, the two spirits enjoy a post-mortal reunion. As a chorus of angels sings from the hilltop, Robert and Mary pass through the clouds into paradise, blessed to be an eternal family through the restored gospel of Jesus Christ.
And this is kind of confusing, too, because in the scene, Mary, the fictional character that you mentioned, she dies on the way from Council Bluffs, Iowa, is where they started, to head west towards the Salt Lake Valley. Well, she's one of those victims who dies along the way, and it's a very dramatic scene of her death scene and the little child running back to the grave of her mother. Well, Robert ends up dying later on. He is killed by an Indian's arrow, and that's when this scene that you just mentioned takes place. It shows Robert, I guess, as now a resurrected type being. And it's Mary who tends to call Robert to her, whereas in Mormon theology, it's the Mormon male that calls up the wife by her temple name. Now, all these details, of course, is not brought out in the pageant, but it just seems odd to those of us who are familiar with the temple endowment ceremony that you have the wife basically calling the husband to her instead of the other way around.
Bill, for three decades, we have attended the Mormon Miracle Pageant in Manti, Utah. What will be the thing that you miss the most?
I think I'm going to miss the yearly reunion that we have had with so many friends over the past three decades. A lot of the people that come to this pageant have been coming for many, many years. And then, of course, we've had a lot of others come later on who have brought their youth groups. And we have met a lot of incredible Christians who have a genuine concern for the eternal welfare of the LDS people. And I'm probably going to miss that most of all. There's a lot of things about the pageant that I'm certainly going to miss. There's probably some things I'm probably not going to miss. It's a lot of work. But let me just say this before we close. As you know, there's a lot of police presence at this pageant. And I just want to say, Eric, and I think you would agree with me, the Utah Highway Patrol that is usually there, the local sheriff that is usually there, and the deputy sheriffs that are there, they have been incredible over the many years. They understand the First Amendment, and it seems like whenever a crowd would start to develop, I'm sure you've noticed this, that when a crowd would start to develop, a lot of the law enforcement people that were there would start to get a little bit closer. And I think you would agree with me on this too, Eric, that it wasn't so much that they were worried that we would do something kind of crazy, because for all these years we've been going, we didn't. We were just there to share the gospel. But you do get occasionally some Mormons that are not used to hearing things that they don't believe, and they don't know how to handle that. But there's one other thing I want to mention before we go. When they play the Star Spangled Banner before the pageant starts, we all stop, we're all quiet, take off our hats, we show our respect. Even though we may not agree with these people theologically, we are still all Americans, and that we can agree. Even though we may disagree on our theology, it doesn't mean that we hate these people. And I think that's something that we need to take away from this. We have a genuine concern. Just as they send missionaries to us, we would send Christian missionaries to them. So yes, I am going to be sad in one aspect that the pageant is no longer, but I'm sure we're going to find a lot of ways to be able to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with members of the LDS Church.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.